Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Martina Longauer from Sightline Wealth Management, and it's November 24th, 2022. And I'm here spending the afternoon talking to Warren Giro, Sightline's strategist for the group. We're doing these regular interviews, and I'm very excited for today because we're going to be talking about this 2022 year that we so far experienced as investors. So I would like to talk to Warren and pick his brain on what we should think about. I just read, you know, the CPI just jumped over 7% when we compare to October 2021. Then another headline jumped at me with, you know, much slower growth. So hi, Warren, what has happened in 2022?
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been a very chaotic year, year of turmoil, to say the least. You know, we've started seeing interest rates increasing, central bank policy increasing with increasing rates. We've seen inflation come on pretty strong this year. And as a result, the markets have acted correspondingly, and it's been very volatile.
So let me just jump in just to kind of, I would love you to just give us a kind of, you know, summarizing. Was it like volatile from the day one? Because I remember we kind of had a pretty good start with that new opening after the pandemic sentiment into the market. We kind of experienced kind of a relief, and it looked like it's going to be a nicer year if my memory serves me right. But then something happened, you know, along the way, and all of a sudden we're in this very ugly situation. So can you just maybe pinpoint, like, by the quarters where we started, how it all kind of got us where we are right now in November? And sorry to jump into the, you know, into the conversation or the what you had been saying.
No, that's great. No, that's great. I'll do that. I think we started the first part of the year with some optimism, even though inflation had started to rear its ugly head and we were having all kinds of supply chain disruption and supply shortages. So inflation certainly had started to be part of the conversation. But in the first quarter, if I can just give you a quick rundown of what happened in the first quarter, everything sort of turned negative late in February when Russia invaded the Ukraine. And, you know, we look at the implications of that for the markets, and we had equities start declining dramatically. We had bond yields rising and commodity prices soared. We have to remember that, of course, as everybody knows now, Russia is a big supplier of energy products, particularly to Europe, but they also are a big grain producer, and both Ukraine and Russia supply grain to the third world, primarily Africa and Asia. So that threw things into a bit of a turmoil. If we can just, I'll just give you a quick rundown and what happened in the quarter regarding the indices. This would all be in Canadian dollars. So the TSX was actually up on the quarter of 3.82%. The S&P was down 5.66. The World Index was down 6.21. EFI was down 6.96. And bonds, as a result of inflationary pressures, bond yields were down, where bond yields were up, bond prices were down, and bond markets, the universe fell about 6.8%. If we looked at what did well in the quarter, energy was the big winner. In Canada, it was up 28%, and materials were up 20%. And that's why the Canadian market was actually had positive numbers versus the other markets.
So this is a summary for the Q1.
This is Q1.
Okay, awesome.
Correct.
Thank you.
So we had losers in the tech industry. Tech in Canada, which is not a big component of the market, but it's down 35%, and healthcare was down about 8%. Contrasting that with the U.S., the U.S. market was up 39% in energy. Utilities were up 4.7%. And all other sectors were down, led by communication services, 11%, and consumer discretionary down 9%. Now, communication services includes a lot of some of these social media networks. And as a result of increasing interest rates, analysts had to do a change the valuation or pricing targets for those companies because interest rates had risen. That changes the discount modeling for future prices, and the tech sector was hit quite dramatically. So if we sort of take a rundown on what really happened, we not only had Russia invading Ukraine, but as a result of that, we had a quite a wide range of strict sanctions from the US and its allies against Russia. And it affected primarily the oil market as well as the grain market. In addition to that, we had sanctions against the Russian financial system, and assets of the Russian central bank were frozen in Western countries. So they're basically, as a result of the inflation, the policies of the West primarily were trying to deny Russia access to the global financial system and income from the rest of the world to try to stall their invasion in the Ukraine. A number of corporations, US corporations, European corporations who were doing business in Russia at the time, they pulled out. It's as a result of the inflation, as it carried on in the quarter, we saw increasing concerns over food and energy and their exports. During that time, we saw in the US, we saw the unemployment rate drop from 3.8 to 3.6 in March. The significance of that was the wage growth was still continuing to lag inflation. And in fact, inflation at that time we saw measured by the Consumer Price Index actually hit 7.9% in February. The other thing that was significant in that first quarter was this is the first time that we saw the Fed reverse course and start raising rates. And they raised rates in March by 25 basis points and have continued to raise rates since then. And Europe, again, they followed basically the US. The markets were down quite significantly. The one significant thing that did happen in the European region during that time was the European Commission announced a plan designed to diversify sources of gas. And they wanted to speed up the rollout of renewable energy because as a result of the sanctions and so forth, they realized that they were going to have difficulty replacing those supplies of gas. I guess
so. The fact that we all kind of felt better to be back in person and socialize and the world was reopening, that wasn't really translated for the Q1 results, right?
Not really, no. Because of I would say the Ukraine was the thing that really sparked a lot of this sort of acceleration in inflation. The reception, the investor sentiment and so forth turned a little bit, I won't say negative, but certainly didn't have the optimism that we had late last year and the early part of this year. So it was very difficult. The other thing that was significant, I would say, in Europe at the time was the Bank of England, which had actually was the first central bank to raise rates. They raised rates by 15 basis points in December. Well, in the first quarter, they followed with two more 50 or 25 basis hikes moved with their funds rate. So that was the other thing that was fairly significant. If we were to look at bonds, we saw some significant changes in the bond complex with the central banks starting to raise rates pretty well around the world, including Canada. Of course, they raised rates in the first quarter. We saw a significant change in the rate structure of the yield curve. The U.S. 10-year rate, for example, went from 151 to 235. And the two-year rate went from 73 basis points to 233. So as you
noticed, it seems like there was no asset but, resources that had been immune. So can you just walk us through the Q2, Q3, and we will kind of come back for those, what exactly, why it has been, showing us the numbers? Yep.
Yeah, the Q2 really was much of the same. The only bright spot, I think, on the international equity market scene really was China, because remember, they had COVID lockdowns in the first quarter, and they started to reduce some of the lockdowns. And as a result, and lifted some of the restrictions in some of the cities. So their equity markets did show a little bit of improvement. Everything else in the US and the UK, Eurozone, were pretty well having difficulties. Now, the other key thing to recognize here, I think, in Q2 was for the first time in Q2, we started to see various economic indicators in the US turning soft. So, for example, the PMI, which is the Purchasing Managers Index in the US, the composite index went from 53.6 to 51.2 in June. The services component also fell at 53.4 to 51.6. But the manufacturing output deteriorated from 55.2 to a two-year low of 49.6. Now, remember, anything above 50% indicates expansion. Anything below 50 represents a contraction. Now, the manufacturing output index has only deteriorated by this magnitude, 5.6 points, only twice before, once during 2020, the pandemic, and the second one was in the financial crisis in 2008. So again, you know, it was a bit of a positive note from the point of view that we started to see the economy slow a little bit, not fall off a cliff, but was still quite resilient. But we did show a little bit of weakness, and hopefully that would later in the year would translate into lower inflation rates. The other highlight, just to give you an idea what bond yields did, this again, the 10-year, it went from 235 to 297. And the two-year rate, this is important, went from 233 to 293. Now that indicates you have an inverted yield curve. In other words, the short end, interest rates on the short end of the curve are higher than the sort of the mid-range or longer rates, the 10-year rate. That usually is an indication that you're heading into a recession. Typically, historically speaking, that's been the case. Now, if we look at closely, we take a quick look at Q3, what transpired there. Now, remember, in Q3, we saw the high in the market in Q3. In July, the market hit the high. And after the high, it started moving substantially lower. And if we look at, I'll give a quick rundown of the indices again. The TSX was down 9.87. Which was, 11.14. That was worse than it was in Q2 when it was down 9.87. The S&P actually showed a little bit of improvement. These are year-to-date numbers. It was improved. It was only down 17.18. The World Index improved at 18.88, and EFI was 20.69. It actually was a little worse than the previous quarter. Bonds actually improved a little bit because we saw the peak in bonds in the 10-year rate during that quarter where they actually peaked around 4.25, and they came off quite a bit. And we saw bonds still down 11.48% year to date, but better. Again, the same thing we've seen in the past. We saw energy complex was up, although down from where the high was. It was only up 18%. Consumer staples actually showed a positive return of 1.5, but everything else was significantly negative, like information technology in Canada down 57 and healthcare down 56. US, the same thing. Energy was up 34%. Everything else was negative in the month. We saw the same pattern play out in Europe as well. No difference there. The only thing that I think was a pretty significant negative globally on equities. China started doing their lockdowns again, and there was some indication that there was going to be some difficulty on the horizon getting to zero COVID cases. In the UK, we saw a new government. That didn't last long, as we all know. It only lasted, I don't know, a few weeks. Her policies were generally not accepted across the board. The other thing I think is important, we'll just talk on bonds very, very quickly. The U.S. 10-year went from 297 to 383 after hitting a peak. And then we saw the two-year go from 293 to 423. And that was in Q3. So that is an inverted yield curve. Again, a strong indication that we're headed for a slowdown. Maybe lately we've been thinking not a recession, or at least a significant slowdown and maybe a mild recession. Prior to that, we were thinking that we were going to go into a pretty hard landing, but that sort of softened over the last little while. And
I want to come back to the different asset classes, but there was something that jumped at me and I just want to address it before we kind of move on. You mentioned that UK was the first country that started, you know, to increase interest rates, but there was, you know, between US and UK, there was a huge difference when it comes to performance of their currency. Right. With all the rate hikes from the US, we've seen the US dollar strengthening significantly with, you know, blip here and there, you know, oscillating, but definitely got stronger, where the UK, you know, currency just went off the cliff. So can you maybe comment on what's so different on those two?
Well, unfortunately, it's you can't really pinpoint one particular thing. The U.S. currency has been strong against all currencies around the world. And the reason for that is the U.S. manufacturing sector, or I should say the U.S. economy, is considered the most resilient. It's the most diverse. And it's also because we have a major source of energy and we also have food supplies. So consequently, we are somewhat energy sufficient, although we still import quite a bit of our oil. But it's we can be energy self-sufficient as we were under the previous administration. So consequently, it's more of the U.S. as being the cleanest of the dirty shirts. And it was not only the pound that almost reached parity or quite close to parity, the Japanese yen also weakened sharply against the dollar. And it was the first time it went to it breached the 130 level. It was the first time in over 20 years. The other thing that happened too in the U.K., of course, is the U.K. Bond market fell apart. And the Bank of Canada or the Bank of England had to come in and start buying gilts on the open market. There was a real threat that there was going to be a run on the on bonds, and there were going to be no buyers, and the yield was going to skyrocket. So they had to come in, and during that time period, the currency weakened pretty significantly, and it has rebounded from that level, but still there's big question marks in the system regarding.
So it seems like the traditional quote unquote safe assets that investors had been relying on to lessen the volatility of their overall portfolios in the past, this particular year was one of the worst ones that they couldn't really count on. Like the fixed income was very difficult throughout the year, and it still is.
It definitely is. I mean, if you take a look at the bond indices, they're down about 11%, we'll call it. And that's a combination of short as well as long bonds. And as we see rates rise, the capital value of your bonds go down. And so bonds have not been a safe haven. In fact, we at Sightline have not invested in the traditional bond market for quite a while. We use alternative debt vehicles and private debt and mortgages and real estate to generate our income. And if I may, just to give you a sort of an idea of where I think interest rates could be going based on a historical perspective and why I don't think they're a safe haven yet. I think we have a little more time to go before they become a bit of a safe haven. I've looked at the tightening cycles going back to 1973. And there were about eight of these. The Fed funds rate, this is US based, and I looked at the Fed funds rate, the CPI, and look at the treasury rates, bond rates. So the Fed fund rates in all cases have ended up being higher than CPI. And treasury rates, with the exception of one period, have always generated a real rate of return. And what a real rate of return is the coupon rate minus inflation. So let's say today we're running at 7.5% to 8% in inflation, and the Fed funds rate in Canada is 3.75, I believe it is, and the US it is 4, we'll call it. So if that is the case, we really need to have the Fed funds rate go up, and we need to see inflation come down. A lot of people are suggesting that inflation is going to go down to around under the 3 handle by end of next year. I'm not that optimistic. I think it's probably more likely to be in the 4 to 5% range. And if we look at what the Fed has been saying recently, they've been talking about a terminal rate or peak of Fed funds rate in the four handle, or I should say 5 to 5.25 handle. In some, James Bullard last week, who was the president of the St. Louis Federal Reserve Bank, he actually said the range was more likely between 5 and 7. Now, let's hope it's not 7. But if the Fed funds rate goes to 5, that would imply that inflation has to come down below that and to be in a positive territory, as it has in the last, you know, as I said, tightening cycles going back to 1973. But that also means that we've always had a real rate of return from treasuries. So that means where we currently are, our long end of the curve, 10-year and 30-year, are 4 minus 4. 10 years below 4 substantially, for let's call it 370 for argument's sake. That means interest rates have to go up quite a ways to become a real rate of return. And I, you know, if inflation does come down to below 3, the Fed funds rate that the, and everybody's hoping, market conditions, everybody's hoping that in this next meeting, which is in December, I think it's coming up December the 6th, Canadian meeting. The next meeting for the Fed is the 13th and 14th, that they're only going to raise rate by 50 basis points. But the key to me is the language. Is he going to soften his hawkish tone? Is he going to sort of be a little more conciliatory? If he isn't, I think it will be bad for equities. I think you'll see a pullback slightly in the equity markets. If he is, I think you see a rally going into the year end. If it's not December, everybody's hoping for January, and the January meeting is the 26th, 27th. So we're nearing the end of the cycle, we hope. But even if they go 50 and then 25, we're still short of that 5 handle. But obviously, that could come down. That would give us 4.75.
Well,
the
let's
US.
Just let's just hope that you are wrong at this point.
Oh yeah, and, I definitely want to be wrong. Trust me.
And let's just see what happens, yeah. I guess. But let's go to a happier place. So tell us what has been working for investors for 2022. And, you know, where do you think we're still having kind of an opportunities and where Sightline is looking for those, you know, and has been from the beginning of the year?
Well, I think the one area that's very evident, of course, is energy. Energy has been a top performer this year, and I think it will continue to be a top performer for the next year anyway, and maybe 2 years. The reason for that is I think the transition to clean energy is going to be a difficult one, and it's going to take a little more time than people think. So
where do you think we are, like, on, and not to pick on, you know, large caps or small caps or anywhere within the energy, and we're talking oil and gas stocks, right? So where on the pricing we are, like, they did have a nice tractions, but, you know, compared to what has happened like years before, but where do you think we are in that sense? Well, like, are we, you know, the first third in, or where do you think we are in relations of pricing off the stocks within the sector?
Well, we can say we're probably in the fourth, maybe fifth inning at the most. The fundamentals of the companies are what is so striking when you look at the PE ratios and debt ratios and all that. Last year, or 2022, really is a year that they had, you know, oil at $80, $75, just still making tons of money. And they've been cleaning up their balance sheets. They've been paying off debt. This year was the year where all these companies, large and small, were cleaning up those balance sheets, paying off debt. Next year is going to be the year, provided energy prices stay in the range where they are right now, is where they're going to start buying back stock and paying bigger dividends. They're not.
Yeah, we heard the
money.
Same. Yeah, we heard the same message from Eric, right? Like, he has been, you know, kind of very vocal about that. That's so. Next year, you're expecting them to spend much more money to buying back stocks and give back to the shareholders and the increased dividend yields on those stories.
So you have basically, you know, Ninepoint has a couple of really attractive Eric Nuttall's Standard Energy Fund, but he has an income fund. And I think it's going to continue to do very well and certainly spew off a nice income stream for those investors who like income. The other area that I have really liked, it hasn't really paid off as much as I had hoped, and that was agricultural products. I think we're coming into food shortages. Everybody I talk to and listen to have been saying the same thing. Particularly, it's going to hit next year in the spring. So we like agricultural products. There are a couple of nice little ETFs out there covering some of the grains and so forth, like that area. The other area that we kind of think is important right now or could be are Canadian banks. If you look at the fundamentals there and you look at the PE ratios and so forth, like the Royal Bank is trading at like 11. If you look at some of the other smaller banks in Canada, of course, there's only five majors, they're trading a little bit lower. So the banks initially in the first quarter actually had a nice run in Canada. In the US, they didn't, by the way. And then most recently, the banks have really fallen off a little in Canada because they took some pretty big loan loss provisions earlier on or sort of mid-year, and that sort of stalled out their performance. So based on pure fundamentals, and let's say the economy muddles through, that we don't have a deep, hard recession, I think Canadian banks, and so, you know, you can look at some ETFs in that space, and I think they're probably going to do well. And also the dividends are, 3 and 4%, which, well, they're bond equivalent, right? And they're certainly much more tax efficient. So we continue to like those areas. The other areas, of course, are plagued by, inflationary pressures and so forth. However, having said that, I think the infrastructure space, there's been a lot of spending by governments on infrastructure. They're going to have to spend a lot of money in infrastructure going forward just to bring us into this transition of clean energy. And we think there's going to be, in the next coming years, there's going to be a lot of money spent on infrastructure, and certainly infrastructure plays, I think, are going to do well. And we have a number of infrastructure sort of, let's call them funds or stocks, what have you, that will do well going forward.
So would you say that, when it comes to majority of our, products that we keep talking to our clients about the alternative, either it's debt or, products that in real estate that had been anchoring our portfolios and helping us through this volatile market, do they still have place? And, should we still talk about them and, have them represented?
I think so. Now I'm trying to be a little more optimistic here. I think, let's say we're going to go into a mild recession. If we go into a mild recession, I think these private debt funds are going to continue to be peeling back some nice dividend yields, or I should say interest payments, income levels. The other area that I like, which I know is very somewhat controversial, is real estate. I like multifamily housing. We've seen the inflation numbers, which in the case of the U.S., 40% of the core rate of inflation is based on housing. We've seen it soften a little bit. And one of the debates is that the Fed is not seeing more recent on-the-ground data. And if they had, that some people have suggested we've seen peak inflation already. The data they're using is a little bit old. But having said that, the issue that some people have with real estate right now is cap rates. And as cap rates go up, or I should say as interest rates go up, cap rates go up, which means the NAV, the net asset value of the unit price would go down. If you look at it strictly from a pure income level sort of view, that may not matter that much. And they're spinning off some nice yields of 7, 8, 9%. And, my belief is that, when you're sort of in a rental situation, I mean, you're going to either try to buy. If you can't buy, you're going to stay in a rental situation and you're not going to give up your house. It's the last thing you give up. You want a roof over your head for you and your family. So I think that's pretty solid. And the returns there have been very attractive. We used a couple of real estate funds at Sightline that we like. They're multifamily type real estate situations in Canada and also the U.S. So I'm still optimistic in that area as well. I think there's a little bit of leg left there. Net asset value may come down, but if you're a long-term investor, it'll come back.
Well, I think, let's just, because we want to make sure that we respect, everybody's, able to digest what we're saying, and we're throwing a lot of numbers and things for getting ready for this with all the stats. Can you just summarize the year again, just for the end of, our discussion, And we will have something for clients starting in 2023, as we always do, and pick some of the, big brains and portfolio managers' brains for the outlook. So we're looking forward to, kind of have that send out to all of our clients in January. But just as a summary of, okay, so this year was definitely, in my mind, it was a wild ride for sure for most of the investors, to say the least. But just as a nice, summary, and I know we are in November, so who knows with, the Fed meeting and everything else, and with the conflicts still, unfortunately, very much in our faces for the Ukraine and the energy needed, more than ever for the winter. Just, might change by the end of the year. But for now, can we just do a quick summary before we, kind of conclude the call today?
Yeah, I guess it's very easy. this year has been all about interest rates, rising interest rates, central bank policy, and it's been all about inflationary pressures and supply chain disruption that happened early in the year that have been resolved pretty well now. So it's really about taming inflation. Unfortunately, it's the supply side that is the biggest worry now. The Fed has no control over the supply side, and I'm speaking primarily about energy and food. So that's been the key drivers of this year. I think it will continue to be driving investment decisions going into next year and in throughout 2023. But hopefully we'll see the central banks at least slow or reduce the rhetoric, the aggressive rhetoric, and calm the waters a little bit. And we should see potentially once that happens, or a pause anyway, we should see stronger equity markets, because a lot of the fundamentals out there are looking very, very attractive. And that's provided, of course, we don't go into a hard landing. Yes, there'll be a slowdown, but the U.S. economy seems to be very, very resilient, and Canadians are tied to the U.S. pretty well. So I think we should be beneficiaries of stronger equity markets in 2023.
Well, thank you, Warren. It's always a pleasure to discuss what's happening out there. And we have heard from our investors and clients that they really enjoy to listen to what you have to say, because you're providing and offering a different perspective. So I'm hoping we are going to continue those discussions in 2023. So thank you very much. And, hope we're going to have much stronger, equity year in next year.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure, Martina.